last night that our subject was going to be loneliness. That's what we want to talk about. Probably several times today, I have no knowledge of it, but I think that statistics would bear this out. Some people contemplated ending their life. I believe I could say without fear of contradiction that today somewhere in the country, somebody found a tall building or bridge and jumped off. Or somebody found the solitude of their own home, took a razor blade and slit themselves somewhere so they'd bleed to death. Or they grabbed the pills on the nightstand, thought about all the problems they had in life, and took many more than what they were supposed to take. I'm confident as well that there were some people in places today that we call nursing homes, rest homes, places like that, who pressed their face up against the window, almost put their nose through the glass, looking for some familiar face, only to have to return to their room saddened because that face didn't come as they'd promised. And all of these things are indicative many times of loneliness. You may not really think the Bible addresses this, but it does. As a matter of fact, if you're here tonight, especially not a child of God, you need to understand, and we do too, that the Bible addresses every problem in this life. That's why Peter would say that God hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness. Paul would say that the Scriptures are perfect, they're complete. They thoroughly furnish us unto every good work. God didn't put us here without a means of guidance. I'm afraid that a lot of people, and maybe some Christians, view the Bible as too hard to understand, and as a book that only deals with very philosophical things, and that theology is best left up to, quote, the clergy. And that the preachers and all of those who go to different kinds of schools are the only ones that can really understand it. Its meaning is too deep. To believe that way is to indict the God who created us. And to tell him in effect that, sorry, you didn't really come up with anything that's going to help us at all. And I don't believe that. This book will furnish us an answer to all of our problems, but we've got to search it. So that's what we want to do tonight. Let's just see if it deals with the problem of loneliness. You may not think that's really such a great problem, especially those of us who may live around big cities and we see a lot of people going from place to place. We see a lot of technology that we might not see if we are in a small town somewhere. But our technology, and as advanced as we are in this age, has done little or nothing to help the problem of loneliness. Matter of fact, it's complicated it in many ways. It's sort of like all of these time-saving devices that you and I have in our homes, and I like them, but we have less time, don't we? I know that so because as I was growing up, it was commonplace to look out your window and see somebody dropping by for a visit. They had time. Not anymore. We're caught up in a mad rush, and we don't have time to deal with each other anymore. We've got to get to work, and then we've got to get home, get our rest, and get back to work the next day. Well, men throughout time have had to work for a living. That's no excuse. We've developed a concept that says all I have to do as a husband and a father is provide a living for my family and put the paycheck on the table at the end of the week and my duty is over. And I don't have to leave the quietness of my home and the softness of that chair to do anything and nobody can make me. And that's not true. People are lonely. They're looking for companionship. They're not finding it. A Time magazine article stated that one wife complained that her husband preferred his computer over her company. Well, we've always had football widows, husbands who preferred the television and football games to spending some time with their wife. I don't know if all the complaints are justified, but we hear a lot about it. Well, now there are computer widows, apparently. And the amazing thing is, after I came across that information, I found out that a good friend of mine and his wife were divorcing after about 15 years of marriage, and one of her complaints was that very thing. It used to be his cars, and now, she says, I've been neglected for his computer. And he had a little business going on the side with it, so there may be some truth in it, I don't know. But I know this much, she found a man who'd pay some attention to her. She's living in adultery. James Lynch, author of a book called The Broken Heart, he says that loneliness is the number one killer in America. I don't know if that's true or not. That's his estimation of it, but I know that it is indirectly a cause of a lot of death. It's never on the autopsy sheet, though. There's always some physical cause that is put down there. But many people get to the point where they physically give up because they're lonely. They have no will to live. And doctors are discovering something they should have already known, that the will to live is vital. That they can have two patients with the identical medical problem, and if one of them doesn't really desire to live, there's a good chance they won't. And the other one who has a strong determination to live, there's a good chance that person will live. What can make the difference sometime? One of them is lonely. They have no reason to live. Oh, they're surrounded by people, but that doesn't mean that they have the companionship that they need. Now, I would have you to know that before we talk about the biblical solution to this, Satan has his own solution to loneliness. But let's go ahead and read some passages to get the text for our study in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 4, verses 9 through 12. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. We're going to see there's the divine solution for loneliness. But let's look first of all at the devil's solution. The devil says, if you want to cure yourself of the problem of loneliness, then get out there in the world and do everything you can to make sure that you're prosperous. Prosperity and the prominence that it will probably bring with it will answer your problem. Surround yourself with nice cars and maybe a couple of nice boats and a nice home. And everything that this whole world has to offer, and incidentally, there's not anything wrong with having some of these things. But the devil says if you will have an abundance of these things, you'll never be lonely. You'll be enjoying life. You'll be living the good life. And you'll never have to worry about being lonely. Well, you usually, if you do that, you won't have to worry about having a bunch of people around you. Friends, put that in quotation marks, but you'll still be lonely, probably. And if you don't believe that, just tell them all those things were taken back, and they'll probably leave. Fair weather friends. And that's just about Satan's solution. The business world says if you want to be successful, that's the way to survive and to overcome the problem of loneliness. Now, the devil says, and people out in the world believe it, you need to have success. And if you'll have that, you won't be lonely. The trouble is, they spell success like this. That's how they spell it. Just accumulate all these things and all this money, and you'll really won't even have a chance to be lonely. Now, just think for a couple minutes about Howard Hughes. He had plenty of money, didn't he? By the standards of the world, that man surely was successful. Why is it then that he occasionally had to sneak away from his bodyguards, get clear away from where he was known, and go hitchhiking? At least one fellow claimed he picked him up that way. And talk to perfect and total strangers. I suspect the man was lonely. He was a prisoner, surrounded by all of his money and his success. Elvis Presley's another man. He died partially, probably as a result of loneliness. You say, how can that be? He lived in a mansion. That's right, he did. He was surrounded by people. That's right, he was. He had plenty of money. That's right, he did. But he was probably lonely. He couldn't hardly get out of there and go anywhere without people mobbing him. Were they friends? Not really. They'd tear the shirt right off his back so they could keep it as a souvenir. I don't think you'd do that to a real friend. I hope not. And you know, I've never had that problem of people chasing me down the sidewalk because I'm such a popular person. And I'm glad. Because there's times I like to just be alone, take a walk, and not have anybody mobbing me. He couldn't do that. He didn't have that luxury. He couldn't afford the luxury with all of his money, all of his wealth. He gave Cadillacs away. That's how wealthy he was. I suspect he was a lonely man. You know, Solomon, a long time ago, tried to find happiness that way. It wasn't there, he said. Why, he tried everything. He tried accumulating things. He tried wisdom. All of these things he tried, and his conclusion was, it's all vanity. It's a striving after the wind. There's nothing to it. And we need to just learn the lesson from Solomon and not have to find it out the hard way. People at the top of an organization, what do they say about them? It's lonely at the top. And it is. You've got people you have to answer to usually, but you've got a whole lot of other people underneath you to keep happy. And some people, in order to get to the top, step on anybody they have to. So they've got the constant worry that someone's going to try to take their place just like they got it. They're lonely. Some people marry thinking that that will solve all their problems, and that doesn't do it either. Usually, if that's why you marry, you're creating a whole lot more. But the point is, all of these solutions really come from the devil and are taught freely out there in our society. And that's not the solution. Now let's look at the solution that the Bible offers for us. The first thing that is said in Ecclesiastes 4 is found in verse 10. And it says that if you have a friend, so that there are two of you, that if you fall, that friend will lift you up. Two is better than one. If you're by yourself, you're alone. But if you want to overcome the problem of loneliness, then you need someone with you. You need a friend who will lift you up when you fall. You know the commercial for Allstate Insurance. You're in good hands with Allstate. Now, what that's trying to convey is that if you will buy our policy, whenever some kind of tragedy strikes, if your home catches on fire, don't you worry about it. You're in good hands. We're going to be right by your side. If you have an automobile accident, put your mind at ease. You're in good hands. We're there to lift you up. Whatever the tragedy is, that's why they push their insurance that way. And really, that's exactly what this verse is saying. If you fall, you need someone there with a helping hand. There's part of the solution for loneliness. And the amazing thing is, that's exactly what the Bible teaches us in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. That's why Paul said in Galatians 6 and verse 1, brethren, even if a man is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and thus fulfill the law of Christ. Did you know that that verse is not in brackets as to denote that it's something that's optional for Christians? In fact, I don't know of a command in the New Testament anywhere that's set off to indicate that it's optional. We just treat them as optional. I have an obligation as a child of God toward my brother or my sister who is caught in a trespass, who is falling or has fallen, to go and lift them up out of that, to see that they need to lift themselves out of the sin, make repentance in their heart for the sin, confess that sin, be forgiven. I need to bear their burden. I need to help them to see that it is possible to overcome sin. Lift yourself back up. Rely on the grace of God. I'm supposed to be there. I'm to be the helping hand for that Christian. And I'm to do it in such a way that I remember that it could be me that is falling, and I would want someone to help me. So I better be taking care of my brothers and my sisters when they're falling and lift them up. If not, they're going to feel lonely. They're going to feel like nobody cares about me. There's a crying need for that among all of us as Christians. We're going to have to get more involved with each other. I'll say more about that in just a moment. Look at 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 11 and 12 with me. Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against the soul. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the things in which they slander you as evildoers, they may, on account of your good deeds, as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. His main point there is that while we're living in this world, we're just an alien, so we are not to partake of the things that are around about us. We don't belong here. We're just, as the song says, traveling through. But as he deals with that, he labels us as aliens or pilgrims and strangers. We need to be able to see ourselves as God's people, as fellow strugglers, wrestling with all of the things in the world that would seek to bring us down. And so that I begin to see you as someone that's toiling and struggling with the same thing that I am. And that you probably need my help, and you need to begin to see me in the same light. And that we go through our life helping each other. We've got a battle to fight. And the devil will not give up on any one of us until we're dead. And that means I need help, and you need help. We're strangers here. It used to be that if you were traveling and had some kind of difficulty, you could count on someone stopping and helping you. That's not true anymore, and to some degree you can almost see why, because of all of the crime that goes along with that, associated with that. You stop to help someone, they put a knife in your ribs. But it's interesting to note that a lot of times it'll be someone else who's traveling that will stop and help you because they appreciate the fact that you don't belong there either. And they don't. And they can almost feel the loneliness that you do and the helplessness of the situation. And they stop and they help you. And I want you to think of something else on this point. A lot of people are out there struggling today with problems like alcoholism, drug addiction, things that really get a grip on them. And they may have tried a lot of different things. They go to different doctors to try to help them. But in the final analysis, many of them are able to overcome it, not with the help of psychiatrists and counselors and all of these people, and some of them are all right to go to. The majority of them are atheists. You better watch out what advice you might get from them. But they're eventually, a lot of them helped out because they go to sessions and identify themselves with other people who have the same problem. And an alcoholic goes in company with other alcoholics and says, my name is Joe, I'm an alcoholic, and I need your help. And that's how a lot of them overcome it. Now, why is that? They see themselves as fellow strugglers. And they're willing to lift each other up. They don't come together in those sessions to put each other down. They are there for help. As far as they're concerned, it's a matter of life or death. Now, why don't we see it that way? Because it is a matter of life or death, and it's in a spiritual sense, not just in a physical sense. What's killing us as Christians everywhere is the fact that a lot of times we don't help each other with problems. And there's a reason for that. The reason we don't help each other with the problems that we face is we don't know about them. And there's a reason for that. The reason we don't help each other with problems because we don't know about them, and the reason we don't know about them is we never take the time to get acquainted with each other. And we see each other on Sunday and Wednesday, if we're here both times. And that's it. I would suspect that that's true here at Haines Street. I know it's true at Joliet. And it's been true everywhere I've ever preached and about everywhere I've attended. In the last few years especially. There was a time when I think we did better. And what we've allowed to happen is society to influence us. Society is caught up in that thing that says, working is so tough, and I've put in my 40 or my 50 or my 60. And that's it. These other guys out there, let them make their own way through this rat race. I've made mine. And we don't have time. I shouldn't say we don't have time. We don't take time to really get to know each other. And it's no wonder then when a problem arises in a congregation, it can hardly be solved without splitting the congregation asunder because we don't know each other. I like to illustrate it this way. If I'm standing at the back, or maybe you are, you're standing in the middle of the aisle, and somebody just walks right past you, if you don't know that person very well, you're inclined to think, well, boy, I think they're too good to talk to me, huh? Got a goody two-shoes or something here. And that'll create some problems between you and that person. But let's say, on the other hand, you really know that person. And they walk right by you in just the same way and ignore you. If you know them, here's what you are apt to think. I guess she's really thinking about that problem again. Or he's still wrestling with that. It's really on his mind. I can tell that it is. I've got to talk with him again. Help him. See the difference it makes? The difference is made on whether or not I've really gotten to know that person and establish a relationship with them. We need such relationships, but we're going to have to work at it. And we become vulnerable when we establish those relationships. We lay ourselves open to that other person, so some caution is advised. I'm not saying just tell everybody all of your secrets. But I'm saying if there is a problem that you're struggling with, then reach out to me. Let me help you with it if I can. If I have a problem, I need to reach out with you. The world won't help me solve my spiritual problem because they're not interested in spiritual things. Now, what this is going to require on each one of us, and this is tough, if someone comes to me and tells me of a problem that they're having, and it is to be kept in confidence, keep it that way. Too much blabbering goes on among Christians. Secret things. And all you have to have is one time when you bare your soul, as it were, to another Christian trying to get help desperately, to have that person to go and spread it to everyone. You probably will never do that again to that individual. And you may just generalize and say, well, I can't even talk to Christians. I can see that right now. What I told them was supposed to be in confidence, and now it's all over the place. And so then you're going to search and turn to someone, and it'll be a person in the world, and you get the wrong advice. We better learn to keep our mouth shut when someone comes to us and tells us something like this. Oh, it's hard. Oh, it's hard to do. I've really had to work at this. Preachers get told things. Some of the times I wish people wouldn't tell me because you bear a certain burden from what they've told you. But there's times when I have to be out in the evening, maybe meeting with someone, and Jane will asked me when I get home, well, what were they wanting to talk about? And I just said, well, honey, I promised I wouldn't tell. And there's things I don't even tell her. Now, that makes it harder on you, because now you all of a sudden are helping to bear that burden too. But wait a minute, isn't that what Paul said? You bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. He helps to bear mine. I better help to bear someone else's. And that's part of what the solution is here. Being a friend and helping lift someone up when they fall. Secondly, though, we see in verse 11 that a friend will protect us from the cold. And this suggests to us that we need to have people standing by all the time. But sometimes we do need them a little bit worse than at other times. Now, preachers maybe can appreciate this need more than others, because our work of necessity moves us around. And I'm not sure that Christians in general have ever appreciated the problem that this is for preachers. I know some of them haven't. I know some of them have never tried. I know of a lot of Christians who think they know everything there is to know about preaching, and yet they've never preached full time. And if you've never preached full time, you don't know what it is. Now you say, well, that sounds like that's kind of arrogant of you to say. It's not really, because if you've never been a plumber, you don't know what it's like to be a plumber. Now, that's not an arrogant thing to say, is it? No. I don't know what it's like to be a plumber. I've never been one. Oh, I've dabbled around at plumbing a little bit. It's real frustrating for me. And I might think that, well, he does that all the time, it wouldn't be any problem for him, but I bet it is. And I need to be careful about saying that. But preachers move around a lot, and many times, not always so, but many times, we move to a community and we know absolutely nobody that's there. No one, except the brethren that we've only met one time on a Sunday. When we went and we preached and we got acquainted with them, maybe we went back one other time to iron out some details, and then we move our family. We uproot them out of schools, and they have to leave their friends, we leave our friends, and there we go. Well, at a time like that, we really need a friend to help us, because, as it were, we're in the cold. We're in a new environment. But I know as well that preachers are not the only people that are in that situation. Some jobs move people around. They face the same thing. But I'm going to tell you what happens too often. They get more comfort when they arrive in that new town from the Welcome Wagon organization than they do their brothers and sisters in Christ. And there's something wrong. Because this verse says, if we want to overcome loneliness, we need someone there to help us through the cold times. When someone moves in among you here and desires to work with you, and you've seen to it that there's no reason why they shouldn't be accepted as members here, and you have that privilege of checking on that, matter of fact, you have that responsibility, you better get with those people and let them know that they're wanted. Otherwise, they might come for a while, and pretty soon you look around and they're not there. And it's so easy to say, well, they must not have been much of a Christian anyway. Can't even take a little moving around. And so it's our fault. We don't ever bother to go lift them up. And they're lonely. And a few weeks go by, and pretty soon they know the people where they work better than they know the Christians. And it's not long before they decide, well, they've shown more interest in me than Christians have. I'll just spend time with them. They'll never stand justified before God on that, but we're not going to be justified either for letting them down. When I moved to Joliet, I kept seeing this man on the back row, young man. He's a young man, 28. He's young. I started asking about him. I asked different people. I said, what do you know about this guy? Well, I really don't know too much. He's been coming for well over a year. He shows good interest, always brings his Bible, and looks like he even contributes. But I don't know if he's a Christian or not. Well, I just, you know, I hear something like that, that's just an invitation for me to talk to him, and I did. Found out that he wasn't a Christian. He'd been brought up not too far from here, really, in Hamilton, Ohio. His folks went to a Christian church when he was a child growing up. They were unfaithful. But that, by the providence of God, is probably what brought him our way, just that contact with some people who were fairly close to the truth, although they weren't standing for it altogether. And we studied with him. We baptized him about 6 weeks later, and he's on fire. Put some of the others to shame. What if nobody had ever taken interest in him? He might still be coming, but he might not. And that could be repeated many times in all churches. They just drift away because of loneliness, and they go find companionship somewhere else. And the divine solution says you be there and protect that person from the cold. They're in a new town. They've got a new job. They're facing surgery. They're facing something in their life that's important. We better be there. You see, that's what Job didn't have, and it made it difficult for him to survive. He desperately wanted God to come to his aid because the three friends that came to him hadn't helped him. They were more interested in diagnosing what his theological problem was than in offering some kind of comfort to him. Oh, they were quick to diagnose what he'd done wrong. But I don't remember reading in there anywhere where they really felt sorry for him and tried to comfort him. He didn't have anyone to come in and lift him up. Even his own wife had advised him to curse God and die. Not worth it. We avoid these close relationships, and we need them desperately. And I want to say a point here, particularly to men. Women tend to have close relationships more so than men. And I think that part of the reason why men avoid close relationship is that we've been taught that if you want to be macho, then you don't depend on anybody. You are your own man and you don't need anyone. And that's why that our children are so often taught, we pass along without thinking, and we teach our boys, now you're a boy and you'll grow up to be a man, so you don't cry. Women cry. And that's a shame if you ever teach your young men that, because that's not true. The example of our Lord shows us that's not true, if nothing else. He wept. It's not a sign of weakness to weep. That's a sign of strength. But we avoid those close relationships, and that's why a lot of men, they have a lot of heart attacks early in life. They've not ever unloaded a lot of their problems on anyone else. They don't survive very long. We need to have close relationships with each other, help each other out. Think of Paul, how he was so encouraged by Onesiphorus in 2 Timothy chapter 1. Onesiphorus searched Paul out. Now here Paul was in prison. Now a lot of Christians might draw the line on that. What would you do if you got a phone call that said, Randy's been in prison because of teaching the truth, been put in jail? They've told him to quit preaching that. He still did it, and they put him in jail. Would you be ashamed to go down there and see him? You know, there were some Christians that were ashamed in the first century of Paul's bonds, but not this man. And that's why he said in verse 16, 2 Timothy 1, the Lord grant mercy to the house of Onesiphorus, for he often refreshed me and was not ashamed of my chains. But when he was in Rome, he eagerly searched for me and found me. The Lord grant to him to find mercy from the Lord on that day. And you know very well what services he rendered at Ephesus. It didn't matter to Onesiphorus that Paul was in jail. He searched him out and he lifted him up when he was cold. He needed a companion, and he found one in Onesiphorus. And we need to think about that example and put it into our life. Thirdly, back to our text, Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 12. It says there that if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. As I was going through high school, for an unknown reason to me, now there may have been a good reason, but it's unknown to me all the way through there, one guy had it in for me. I never to this day know why. And I don't mind admitting that I was afraid of it. Mainly because he had more muscles in one arm than I had in my whole body. And they stood out. You could see them. Constant reminder that he was strong. He was a champion wrestler. Went to the state meet probably 2 out of the 3 years or 4 years he wrestled. I don't know why he had it in for me. But I know this much. When I saw him coming down the hallway, I tried to latch on to somebody if I was going by myself. I either slowed down to get with the group or speeded up. I didn't realize it then, but what I was doing was demonstrating what that verse said there. That if I was with somebody else, he might not pick on me. If I was by myself, there's a good chance that he would, and I was a coward. One time in a PE class, a friend and I were wrestling, and since he was a big wrestler, he got to help the PE teacher. And he comes over and he's going to referee our little match that we had going. He didn't realize that the fellow I was wrestling with was a good friend. We grew up together. He didn't know that, so he leaned over and he said, "Just stick it to Curry. Pin him good." Well, I tell you what, I was thankful that I was wrestling the fellow that I was, because he didn't do it to me. We were friends. But that's always stuck with me, and it's taught me the lesson of this verse. You need someone to come to your defense when you're being attacked. And sometimes we stand back and we don't do that. We allow someone in the church, a Christian, to be attacked. Things are said about them that we know are not true. But sometime, because of who's saying them, we won't do a thing about it. And a reputation is damaged and tarnished. His effectiveness is ruined, and we stood by and did nothing. And this verse says, I need to go to someone's aid who's being overpowered. They're being attacked. They need my help, and I better go to them and defend them from lies, malicious gossip. All kinds of things get started. Stories that, if you just even stop and think about them, couldn't be true. To say nothing of the fact that many times they're investigated, there's no basis in fact whatsoever. But for every gossip that's in a congregation, somebody's allowing it. And they're not practicing what this verse says. The best thing to do if someone comes to you and begins to gossip about another person is just say, "Let me get my coat. We're going to go talk to that person." That'll put an end to it quick. Unless it's true, and then you can go and confront the person. There's an elder of a church not far from me, and that's his practice. If anybody in the congregation comes to him with a complaint about the preacher or about anybody, he said, "Just a minute, we've got to go pay him a visit." And he does it. He gets the two of them together. And that's what needs to be done. So if someone comes to you and begins to talk about someone else, don't listen. Just tell them, "I'll listen to you as soon as that other person is standing here too." And then when you find out that person to be a gossip, then you need to deal with him. Discipline them if they won't repent of that sin, because that ruins congregations too. But I think of Jonathan standing by David. Saul became very jealous of David. The women sang, "Boy, Saul has slain his thousands, but David his 10,000s. And every time they sang that, Saul got a little bit madder probably. And he sought David's life. But Jonathan made a covenant with David. And in effect said, "I will come to your aid. I will defend you. I will warn you of anything that my father is trying to do by way of harming you. I will be there when you need me." And he was. Put himself between David and his own father. Now there is a true friend. And that's exactly what we're supposed to be. And we have an example of a true friend. In 2 Timothy, the third chapter this time, Paul writes of a time when he was being persecuted. Chapter 4, 2 Timothy 4. And he says, "At my first defense, no one supported me, but all deserted me. May it not be counted against them." There was a time, Paul says, I stood up to make my defense, and I looked around, and there weren't any Christians anywhere. But the Lord stood with me and strengthened me. in order that through me the proclamation might be fully accomplished, that all the Gentiles might hear, and I was delivered out of the lion's mouth. The Lord will deliver me from every evil deed, will bring me safely to his heavenly kingdom. To him be the glory forever and ever. Amen. Paul says that when I look around and I don't see anyone, I still know that the Lord is with me because the Lord is my friend. That's what Paul said, and you know he's my friend too, and he'd like to be your friend. So that we really are never alone. There's a song, I don't know what number it is in this book, if it's even in there, but it's called No, Never Alone. And it doesn't matter how much is going on in your life and how you're being assaulted by Satan. Of course, other people are doing it for him. Know that the Lord is right there with you. And I've had to rely on that sometimes. There's hard things to do sometimes associated with standing for the truth. What if you're the only one, I mentioned the other day in a class at school, who refuses to cheat? Feels lonely, doesn't it? You're not alone. The Lord's right there with you. Or if you're the only one on the job who's trying to give 8 hours of work for 8 hours of pay, you're not alone. The Lord's with you. My dad had to change jobs 3 times, at least one time I can remember. Not because the company was harassing him in any way, but because the men were getting on to him because he made production. The company said, here's the production level, and he made it, and they got mad at him. Worked on him so bad, he changed jobs 3 times to get away from those kind of people. That's a sad commentary on how people are. But through all of that, I believe he realized that there was someone with him, and that's the Lord. And you need a friend like the Lord. I want to leave that thought with you. But I also want us to be committing ourselves now to establishing some better relationships. Let's get to know each other. At home, what I did one time talking about that point, I named someone in the congregation and I said, how many of you know what color house he lives in? Got a lot of surprised looks. They didn't know why. They'd never been there. I know for a fact of one family that's been in that church 20-some years at least. I've been there 2 years. I know where some of the people live and they don't. And I want you to know too that it's not my duty any more than theirs to know where that person lives. A Christian will know where his brothers and sisters live because he goes there and visits them often. We better establish those kind of relationships. Did you ever stop and think that if we don't spend any time with Christians now, we surely won't enjoy eternity with them because we'll be around a bunch of strangers? Of course, the truth is, if we don't spend time with Christians now, we won't have to worry about being in eternity with them. We won't make it because we can't help them with their problems if we don't know them. And I don't know about you, but I enjoy being around Christians. It's one of the fringe benefits of preaching, especially. Let's get those relationships going. The problems in the church can be overcome a lot easier. But before you can do that, you have to know Jesus as your own friend. That is always beside you. So I want you to think about that. If he's not your friend, and he said, you know, if you love me, keep my commandments. It's a matter of obeying him. That's how we demonstrate that we really love him, that we indeed want to be his friend, and he'll be our friend. If you've never done that, then you need to do that tonight. And if you strayed away from him, demonstrate the fact that you are going to declare your friendship for him again. You'll become an enemy of the world when you do that. But that's all right, because the world can't help you, but Jesus can. If you need to respond, we hope you will as we stand and sing together.